Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And we have quite a number of verses to cover. We actually have 20 verses to cover, but anyway, we will do our best. I think we'll get through. So, we finished up yesterday. Last verse we read was 42. So, there is something of a change of theme. You know, if you've been keeping track a bit in our study guide, you would see every now and then the theme changes to some degree at least. So, 42 was dealing with the pastimes of the Lord. Remembering the pastimes of the Lord. How Krishna Govinda is supporting that process. And now we go on to, it's the second to last bit, really. It is. How Krishna is the Supreme Lord of all Lords. And the way that Lord Brahma does it throughout this whole, what it's like, 10 verses, is first of all, he talks about the different realms, different levels of planetary systems in the material and spiritual worlds and even in between. And here and there, he talks about different of the deities, like presiding deities in those different worlds, different realms. So in the beginning, verse 43, you could say it's a little bit like an overview of the different worlds. I'll just read the translation of 43. Lowest of all is located Devidan, the mundane world. Next above it is Maheshdan, the abode of Mahesh. Mahesh means Shiva, Lord Shiva. Above Maheshdan is placed Haridan, the abode of Hari. And above them all is located Krishna's own realm named Goloka. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who has allotted their respective authorities to the rulers of those graded realms. Just basically means realms which are on different levels, different grades of development, sort of grade of development one, grade of development two, this sort of idea. So in fact, we see that four realms are mentioned. In this section here from 43 to 52, 55, where are we? 43 to 52. We go up to Harida, and it's actually in verse 56 where there's a very amazing description of Goloka. It really is something, well, out of this world. What can you say? Well, even Haridham is out of this world, but Golokadham is just way out of this world. So anyway, we'll get there in due course to 56. But next, so that's 43, just in a nutshell. It's just really introducing these realms which are now going to be discussed. Let's go on to 44, the next verse, which is talking about Devi Dham, the realm of Durga. So that's 44. So we'll have a look at that. Just a sec, I'm just checking something. Yeah, okay. So 44 is discussing at some length about Devi Dham, the first of these realms and the lowest. Of course, it's just the material world. The external potency, Maya, who is of the nature of the shadow of the chit potency, is worshipped by all people as Durga, the creating, preserving, and destroying agency of this mundane world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in accordance with whose will Durga conducts herself. Have a look at my notes here. Okay, so, well, let me read from the purport. Yeah. From the beginning of the purport, I'll read some, maybe 10 or so lines. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gives a vivid description of Durga. He says, and this is just the beginning of the purport, the world in which Brahma takes his stand and hymns the Lord of Goloka is Devi Dham, consisting of the 14 worlds, and Durga is its presiding deity. She is ten-armed, representing the tenfold fruit of activities. She rides on the lion, representing her heroic prowess. She tramples down Mahishasura, representing the subduer of vices. Means she is representing the subduer of vices. She is the mother of two sons, Kartikeya and Ganesh, representing beauty and success. She is placed between Lakshmi and Saraswati, representing mundane opulence and mundane knowledge. She is armed with the 20 weapons, representing the various pious activities enjoined by the Vedas for suppression of vices. She holds a snake, representing the beauty of destructive time. Such as Durga, possessing all these manifold forms. Durga is possessed of Durga, which means a prison house. Yeah. So that's this world, material world, Devida. It's the world of Durga. And Durga, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta mentions, it means a prison house in very literal Sanskrit terms. Durga. Dur means very difficult or a very long way. I'm not sure which is more common, but it's very difficult and or very long way. You know, sometimes if you're speaking to people, particularly in the more central northern areas of India, if you ask them how far to somewhere, they may reply, "Oh, bahut dur hai." It's very far, because dur means very far. But there's also the implication of difficulty. And ga in Sanskrit is a form, at least a form, of the root, the dhatu, or root, of the Sanskrit verb to go, ga. In Sanskrit, if you want to say, "I am going," then it's gacchami. You are going, gacchasi. He or she or it is going, gacchati. Gacchami, gacchasi, gacchati. This is a declension in Sanskrit. I go, you go, he, she, or it goes. So durga, ga is like, more like a root, very basic form from which the other forms, you know, I am going, I will go, I was going, and I have gone, all these forms of the verb to go. Ga is like a very basic form, kind of like infinitive. I think the actual dhatu, who knows what of Sanskrit, is gam. Gam. The dhatu, the very root form, is gam. So durga, very difficult to go, very long way to go. That's the material world. In fact, it's so difficult. You know, in 7:14 Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that this material nature, this divine nature of mine, composed of the three modes, is very difficult to overcome. But if you surrender to me, and Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that when Krishna says that, if you surrender to me, he points at his chest. If you surrender to me, then you can easily cross beyond. Otherwise, it's hard. Just a little amusing point. I am based in Durban. It's a fact. Durban. Dur meaning, in this case, long way. And ban meaning forest. It is the most distant forest of Vrindavan. Durban. Yeah, it's just a joke, of course. So, well, okay, so that's the idea. And as described, she has her weapons. She's got 10 arms. She rides on a lion. Sometimes she rides on a tiger. And one of the most classic pictures, that you see of Durga is when she is in the process of killing this Mahishasura. It's very famous. He's lying on the ground, she's on top with her trident, just about to give him the mercy. Yeah. And sometimes the depiction is there of Lord Shiva also. She became so carried away, she attacked Lord Shiva. And Mahishasura is taken to be sort of a representation of vice and just demoniac materialism, that sort of thing. So, yeah, the weapons. Well, it's interesting how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta presents the weapons here. Srila Prabhupada and other acharyas present the weapons differently in different of their writings and so on. Here, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that she is armed with the 20 weapons representing the various pious activities enjoined by the Vedas for the suppression of vices. Srila Prabhupada, at least in one place that I've seen, Prabhupada says these weapons represent the miseries of material life, because she is the presiding deity of material life, of course. And Prabhupada makes, the way he puts it is that the materialists, of course, they're trying to avoid the problems of material life, which means they're trying to avoid the weapons. The weapons are coming and they are dodging. And the way I saw Srila Prabhupada put it, at least once, is that if the trident doesn't get you, if you dodge the trident, maybe the chopper will get you. And if you dodge the trident and the chopper, maybe one of the sort of like swords or sabers or daggers, maybe one of them will get you. And then Prabhupada said, if you avoid all the weapons, if you become an expert materialist, then Prabhupada says, maybe the lion will get you. So, anyway, we respect what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, but definitely Srila Prabhupada puts it this way. And, you know, in Hinduism, Durga is often referred to as Mataji, Matadi, Mataji. But she is a heavy Mataji. You know, there are Matajis and Matajis. Some are gentle and, you know what I mean, just very sort of pleasant, easygoing people. And you get some heavy Matajis. She's the original heavy Mataji. Yeah. And her business is to destroy everyone, to make it as difficult as possible, and eventually just destroy. Prabhupada made the point that Durga, Maya Devi, Prabhupada said she has no morality. You know, when Kshatriyas fight, if one of the fighters is knocked to the ground, Kshatriya, codes of conduct stipulate the other one should stand back and wait for him to get up. Prabhupada talking about Durga in these terms. Prabhupada says, Maya has no morality. She knocks you to the ground, and when you're on the ground, she just jumps in, bang, bang, and keeps bashing you on the ground. And for the devotees, the business of Maya is to test you. Keep testing you. Are you going to be Krishna conscious in this situation, in that situation? If this happens, are you going to remember Krishna, or are you going to just sort of get bewildered and in one way or another? And Prabhupada said, when the devotee actually comes to the level of pure devotional service, like sustained, constant pure devotional service, Maya Devi steps back and offers her obeisances. I don't know if any of us have reached that point yet. In the meantime, she is relentless. She just never stops pushing the devotee. Are you going to be serious? Are you going to be serious? What are you going to do? She keeps pushing the devotee without a break, really, until the devotees come to that point. Then she steps back. Now, at the end of this purport, there's an interesting little statement somewhere. Okay. It is right at the end of the purport. Durga, worshipped by the people of this mundane world, is the Durga described above. But the spiritual Durga mentioned in the mantra, which is the outer covering of the spiritual realm of the Supreme Lord, is the eternal maidservant of Krishna and is therefore the transcendental reality whose shadow, the Durga of this world, functions in this mundane world as her maidservant. Yeah, okay. And he says, this is referred to in verse 3. It's a bit complicated. I mean, I can show you. If you can turn back to verse 3, I can show you where this Durga is referred to, not by name. Not by name. Where are we? Not by name. Let me just find it. Oh, I've got to look. It's Jiva Goswami, actually, who explains about it. Just give me a few seconds. Jiva Goswami says, what does he say? Sometimes Durga is considered the Adishtatri Devata. By considering the non-difference between the Shakti and the possessor of the Shakti, in the actual Sanskrit, in the Sanskrit of text 3, second line is the word prakritya purushena cha, Jiva Goswami at least translates, the yantra is accompanied by prakriti, the deity of the yantra, and purusha, the deity of the mantra. You know, I don't want to delve into matters which are just going to be too complicated and time-consuming. But the deity of the yantra, prakritya, can be considered to be Durga. The Purusha, the deity of the mantra, is Krishna. Now, what does this mean when we say Durga? Does this mean just, you know, the same Durga which has been discussed in this verse 44, who is the deity of the material nature, the one on the lion with the weapons and, you know, sort of challenging, testing the devotees, smashing the materialists. No, it's this Durga is a different Durga. It's the Durga mentioned in these last few sentences of the purport which we read. The spiritual Durga. This term Durga is used sometimes to refer to the category of people, of women, headed by Radharani. Radharani, Lakshmi, Sita, these transcendental ladies. Sometimes they're referred to as Durgas. I mean, not in the sense of, you know, like Durga, as we were saying, in the material world, just keeping people entangled in the world and testing people, devotees in the material world. Listen to this. This is from the Narada Pancharatra. Durga is the Supreme Goddess. She is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Simply by understanding her, one immediately attains the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not otherwise. She is identical with Gokula's queen, Sri Radha, who possesses a great treasure of love for Krishna. By her grace, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of Living Entities, is easily understood. She is the potency of personified devotional service. Because she's understood only with great difficulty, the saintly devotees call her Durga, difficult to understand. She is the personal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. From her is manifested the Mahamaya potency. In other words, she's a high-level transcendental goddess. We may not know so much detail about, like, did you know before about the spiritual demigods? I'm just asking you. Did you know? I imagine some of you did. But maybe not all of you. So there are. And she's one of them. And in in the sense, not in the sense of being difficult to escape from, but in the sense of being difficult to understand, then she is sort of, well, like, at least her name is used sometimes in reference to Radharani, Lakshmi, Sita, Yoga Maya. Yeah. So this is what's being mentioned at the end of this purport of verse 44. And she is the eternal maidservant of Krishna. And her shadow is the Durga of this material world. Are you okay with that? Are you okay with that? Put your hand up if you're not okay with that. He's partially not okay. It's just an overall term referring to a category of living entities. Radharani, Lakshmi, Sita, Rama. Yeah. They're in this category, Durgas, the spiritual Durga, who is involved. Well, verse 3, if you remember, was the beginning of the discussion about the yantra and the mantras in the yantra. So in that sense, she is considered to be the presiding deity of the yantra itself, the figure, the device itself, whereas the Lord is the deity of the mantras. Prakritya Purushena, spiritual Durga. Let's go on to 45. Well, you want to ask something about that? Just like you're sort of okay.
For the verse 3, Prakriti is considered along with the predominant aspect of the absolute. You saw the predominant aspect is Radharani.
That's right. And she's a Durga in this context.
You mean Radharani is referred to a spiritual Buddha, or she's different from Radharani?
This Durga is very spiritual.
But she's different from Radharani.
Not really. She's a category. She's a category. It's like the name of a type. Generic term. Yes, Prabhupada.
Verse 43.
It's in between the two. We'll get there. Don't worry, shortly. We're on the way. Let's go on to 45. So this is a classic verse. I'm sure you've heard it before or heard of the concept before. Just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, but yet the effect, curd, means yogurt, by the way, is neither the same as nor different from its cause, milk. So I adore the primeval Lord, Govinda, for whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. Yes. Well, just in regard to the very last question that was raised, you know, if you want to go into this really in more detail, if you read chapter 3 of the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, this particular point, you know, where is Mahesh Dharm? Is it in the spiritual world, the material world? Is it sort of mixed? Is it partly spiritual, partly material? What's it all about? It's addressed in Brihadbhagavatamrita, as I recall, it's the third chapter of the second part, Gopakumar. Gopakumar passes from Devi Dham through Mahesh Dham and then enters Hari Dham. Yeah. I just extracted a few verses from there. So he leaves Devi Dham and starts going through the coverings. Listen to this. Is everyone awake? Has anyone died? Or gone into some sort of trance or something? Listen to this. So, yes, Gopakumar left Brahmaloka. In Devi Dham, you don't get any higher, really. I mean, there's Janaloka, Mahaloka. But he left the highest parts of Devi Dham and entered the coverings. One thing to remember about the coverings, you know, this is the idea that the universe is there like these golden balls, right? In the center is, you know, the living space where the planets are, etc. So, devotees, the first covering is Earth. It is 10 times thicker than the universe, that the inner part where the living space that we're in. It's 10 times more than that. Then the next, Earth water, is 10 times bigger than the Earth. And so on till you get to false ego, everything is 10 times more than the previous one. So just consider this for the sake of interest or argument. If the living space was 1 millimeter, just for argument's sake, 1 millimeter, means the Earth is 1 centimeter, right? 10 millimeters, 1 centimeter. The water is 10 centimeters. Well, the fire is 1 meter. Fire is 1 meter. Yes? Earth, water, fire. Air is 10 meters. Ether is 100 meters. Mind is 1,000 meters, am I right? Have I lost track?
100 kilometers.
100, shall we say 100 kilometers? Is it? 1,000 meters, thank you, yeah. And we still got to go through, that was mind. Intelligence is 10 kilometers then. And false ego is 100 kilometers thick. If the center where we are living is 1 millimeter, you get an idea of the scale of things. I mean, it's just, sure, it's pretty amazing. So anyway, Gopakumar in Brihadbhagavatamrita, he enters the first covering. Okay, let's just read about this just for 2 minutes. So he says, I reached the universe's coverings, which had happinesses and opulences, millions of times more than Brahma Loka. Hare Krishna. Through in the earth covering, he saw Bhumi worshipping Varaha. Within each and every hair on the body of Lord Varaha were rotating all the opulences of the universe. Anyway, I just leave that one with you. This is all this. It's another dimension. So Bhumi received Gopa Kumar in a very nice way and said, please stay. Give us your association. But he said, thank you, and carried on. In the other coverings, he saw Lord Matsya, Lord Surya, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Sankarshan, and Vasudeva being worshipped by the great forms of the deities of water, fire, air, ether, etc. As he goes through each layer, he meets the deity. As he did, he met Bhumi. So then he meets the deity of fire, of water. And there he sees the deity of earth water is worshipping Matsya. Fire, the deity of fire is worshipping Surya. So like this. Then he comes to the final covering and sees the goddess Prakriti worshipping her deity, Mohini. So Prakriti, the deity of the final layer, offers him all mystical powers, says, please stay. You can have these. But then he traveled on. So as Gopa Kumar traveled on, now he has left the final covering. And he enters the Brahman effulgence. In the Brahman effulgence, he sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then the Lord sort of fades out of vision. But then he comes back into vision. And then he fades out of vision. And Gopa Kumar became fearful because he thought he might merge into the Brahma Jyoti. So, but then he saw Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, so now he's entering through the Brahma Jyoti or in the Brahma Jyoti, he's entering Mahesh Dhan. He meets Lord Shiva and Lord Shiva congratulates him. And Lord Shiva tells him, someone who has great faith in performing their own Varnashram duties, gets the mercy of Lord Hari. If that mercy is multiplied 100 times, one may get the post of Brahma. If that mercy is again multiplied 100 times, Shiva says, one may get my post. You may become a Shakyavesh avatar, Lord Shiva, if you're interested. If the mercy I receive from the Lord is multiplied 100 times, one attains Vaikuntha. So, you know, let's just have a look here. in the purport, there is, let's see, the Heshta Rudra Day. No, it's not. Elsewhere. It must be in the Brihadbhagavatamrita. There's mention of there being two parts in Mahesh Dham. One part is called Mahakala Dham, which is on this side of the Viraja River. Then there's the other part is called Sadashiva Loka. It is on the other side of the Viraja River. Viraja River means the causal ocean where Mahavishnu is lying. So in other words, from this, it sounds like part of Mahesh Dham is in or connected with the material world. And the other part, Sadashiva Loka, is connected with or even sort of marginally in Vaikuntha. Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila chapter 6 verse 79 purport. In the Vayupurana there's a description of Sadashiva in one of the Vaikuntha planets. That Sadashiva is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form for pastimes. It is said that Sadashiva, meaning Shambhu, is an expansion from the Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha planets. And that his consort Mahamaya is an expansion. So he is an expansion of Lord Vishnu. And his consort Mahamaya is an expansion of Rama Devi. So, anyway, back to the verse itself. The verse itself is talking about Shambhu or Lord Shiva as being like yogurt in relation to milk. Famous example. If you add some acid, you know, the different types of acids you can add. Acidophilus is a very good one. If you add acidophilus to hot milk, but not boiling, and then leave it, the acidophilus changes the milk into yogurt. I don't know, have any of you made yogurt before? Yeah. You add a culture, which is an acid, a form of acid, like acidophilus, to the hot milk. Maintain the temperature of the hot milk, like hot to warm milk, overnight. In the morning, you've got yogurt. This is the nature of Lord Shiva. So it means, and actually we mentioned this the other day when we were talking about the glance, it means that Lord Shiva, Shambhu, or Lord Shiva, he's a form of Vishnu, just as yogurt is a form of milk. You cannot say it is something else. It's a form of milk. But it has been transformed to some degree. And the transformation is permanent. You can make yogurt out of milk. You can't make milk out of yogurt. You cannot reverse the process. You know, sometimes the people who make fruit juices, they boil the juice until they get what they call a concentrate. And it's concentrated. And there's much less quantity than the actual juice itself. So they transport it internationally and then mix it with water. Because water is, when they boil it to make it into a concentrate, what they boil away is the water. So they add water, like maybe 90%. They add water and then they sell it to you as fruit juice. But I don't know if you ever noticed, the juice is made from concentrates. They're never as nice as the original juice. Yeah. So, in that case, you can sort of transform it back into the original state by just adding water. But with Lord Shiva, there's no process by which you can just change him back into milk. That's what he is. Therefore, and it's a, his position is eternal. It's not exactly that at some point in time he got transformed. He's always been like that. He always will be like that. Yeah. So this is Lord Shiva. And yogurt, of course. Yogurt is nice, but yogurt is sour. Milk is sweet. Milk is considered a sweet taste. Yogurt is a sour taste. So that's just a little bit about the nature of Lord Shiva and his Dham. When Gopakumar went through, he saw that the Mahakala part was in darkness, indicating some connection with the material world. But Sadashiva Loka was in light and was connected with the spiritual world, just right next to the spiritual world. Then, verse 46. Is talking about Haridam. The light of one candle being communicated to other candles, although it burns separately in them, is the same in its quality. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who exhibits himself equally in the same mobile manner in his various manifestations. So this is about Haridam and talking about the different deities, different personalities there. We mentioned yesterday, you remember, about Nrsingadev, Ramachandra, and Krishna. They're considered to be the only three personalities who possess all six opulences. But not completely. Only Krishna possesses them completely. Nrsingadev has all six opulences, but not completely. Particularly, he has the power. He's got a lot of the power. Lord Ramachandra also has the power, like Nrsingadev, but he has more beauty. He has more beauty. Therefore, you generally don't hear. Did you hear about Lord Nrsingadev's rasa dance? Did you hear about it? No, because he doesn't have a rasa dance. He's not beautiful like that. He's a very imposing type of figure. Lord Nrsingadev actually In Brihadbhagavatamrita, there's a discussion about Nrsingadev. And there are three types of Nrsingadevs. One is the Nrsingadev who came and killed Hiranyakashipu. Then there's a second one. And then there's a third one. And you know what the third Nrsingadev is? A domestic cat. Hare Krishna. A domestic cat. This is in Brihadbhagavatamrita. Oh, I can't remember. You'd have to look in Brihadbhagavatamrita. But there are three. So here, this is discussing Haridam, but particularly in the context of the deities, different forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah. Like the different avatars even. But in the purport, we won't go through the purport, but in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are also counted amongst the avatars, but this idea of the light of the candles, what's being discussed here, doesn't exactly apply to Brahma and Shiva, because there's some contamination there. Therefore, they're really in quite a different category from the more normal avatars who are directly expansions of the Lord Himself. Then 47. 47 is interesting. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who assuming his own great subjective form, who bears the name of Shesha, replete with the all-accommodating potency, and reposing in the causal ocean, with the infinity of the world in the pause of his here, enjoys creative sleep. This is a bit of a mixture here. Shesha and Mahavishnu. He's saying Shesha has the all-accommodating potency. Well, in the purport he mentions the subjective nature of Ananta, who has the form of the couch of Mahavishnu, is described. Actually, the origin of this accommodating potency of Shesha is Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram. Shesha is an expansion of Lord Balaram. And Lord Balaram is really the seat of this, like the original source of the accommodating potency. So then, let's see. We go on, well, to some other, let's have a look here, 47. Oh, we're in 47. Where are we? 48. 48 is discussing Mahavishnu. Lord Brahma and the other lords of the mundane worlds, the demigods. They remain alive as long as the duration of one exhalation of Mahavishnu. In the Sanskrit, Vishnur Mahan Saiha Yasya Kala Vishesha. That I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whose subjective personality Mahavishnu is the portion of a portion. Compared to us, Mahavishnu is very great. Even Lord Brahma only lives for the period of time from one of Mahavishnu's exhalations to inhalations. And that's Lord Brahma. That's Lord Brahma. But Mahavishnu is a portion of Govinda, Krishna. So now, from 49 onwards, there is some description of some of the demigods. First of all, where are we? 49. Lord Brahma, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom the separated subjective portion Brahma receives his power for the regulation of the material world, of the mundane world. Just as the sun would manifest some portion of his own light in all the effulgent gems that bear the names of Surya Kanta, etc. You know, you may have read about the Surya Kanta gem. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. It has its own effulgence. Yeah, if you put it in a dark room, it will illuminate the dark room because it has its own effulgence. Even, you know, an interesting thing, you've probably never seen a bar of molten gold. Did you ever see it? Liquid gold. Liquid gold has its own effulgence. Yeah, you can place it in a dark room and it will give some illumination to the room, yes. So only when gold is liquid. And then there's some gems headed by Surya Kanta, but there are others which have effulgences of their own. They can illuminate independent, but they're not independent because the illumination has been given by the sun. So that's the idea in verse 49. And then in 50, the ever popular Ganesh. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, whose lotus feet are always held by Ganesh upon the pier of Tumulai. Means his little sort of, what would you call them? Little bumps, almost like little, what would you call them? Tumuli. They're almost like little horns on his head. So, yeah, he holds lotus feet of the Lord on those little horns, tumuli, protruding from his elephant head, in order to obtain power for his function of destroying all the obstacles on the path of progress of the three worlds. Any of you who are from Hindu backgrounds would know extremely well that in so many Hindu houses, over the front door is Ganesh. This is just so extremely common. And the idea is, Ganesh removes obstacles and challenges. So when you enter the house under Ganesh, who's over the front door, the idea is the house will be free from obstacles and difficulties. However, the people don't know that he is getting that potency from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated here by Lord Govinda, Krishna himself. Elsewhere it's stated that his power comes from Nrsingadev, from Krishna through Nrsingadev to Ganesh. And it's like, in this way, Ganesh is able to remove obstacles. You probably know that in Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami has said, in the list of 64 rules, that the devotee should start the worship of Ganesh. You've seen that, I imagine. Although we note that Srila Prabhupada, although he started the performance of many of those things in the 64 rules, he didn't start the worship of Ganesh. It's just not there in ISKCON as given by Srila Prabhupada. However, if you have a look through the letters of Srila Prabhupada, anyway, if you look through the folio on computer of Srila Prabhupada, you'll see that one devotee, it may have been Guru Kripa Swami, but don't quote me, one devotee asked Prabhupada about this. Can I start the worship of Ganesh? Because it says so in Nectar of Devotion. And Prabhupada replied sort of something along the lines that, yes, you could. But the thing is, Prabhupada said, to do that worship, you need a qualified priest. And you will not find one. Prabhupada said, so, I will do it for you. I will do it for you. But in order to have me do it, you will have to give the appropriate dakshin monthly. You will have to give $100,000 a month. It went no further. I mean, of course, there are people who can afford $100,000 a month, actually. But in those days, a brahmachari or a sannyasi, there's just no question. In other words, Prabhupada was saying, look, I know Rupa Goswami says it, but it's just not for us. It's just not practical for us. So please, just forget about it. And that's what happened. He forgot about it. So Ganesh, then verse 51. Well, 51 is just pointing out, I don't think I'll even read it. Well, let me read it. The three worlds are composed of the nine elements, which means fire, earth, ether, water, air, direction, time, soul, and mind. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom they originate, in whom they exist, and into whom they enter at the time of the universal cataclysm. In other words, well, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says at the beginning of the purport, there is nothing in the three worlds save, except for, the five elements, the ten quarters, time, jiva, soul, the mental principle, like that. This is basically all there is in the material world. We were once on Navadvipa Mandal Parikrama many years ago, And Jayadvaita Maharaj was there. And we just had a big kirtan. Big kirtan. And he was to give class. So he sat down, everyone sat down. He started the class. And he said, Nama vina kichu nahi ko ara chodu bhuvana maje. Which means, there is nothing other than the name in all the 14 worlds. And then he said, all right, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. And that was the end of the class. Seriously, he actually did that. And that was the end of the class. Just the holy names. Yeah. So there's nothing in the material world, however you look at it. You know, you could analyze it a bit further than this. The three modes and the senses. I mean, you could if you wanted. But whatever there is, it's just under the control of Govinda. That's all. And that's the message of verse 51. Then verse 52, let's have a look. Oh, this is about the sun. This is about the sun. You know, one thing Prabhupada said is that if a devotee has some attraction to worshipping some demigod, at least the demigods mentioned in Brahma Samhita means Shiva, means Durga, means Surya, these are and Ganesh. These are the demigods mentioned in Brahma Samhita, but by name. If anyone is attracted to that, what they should do is simply chant the particular verse or verses from Brahma Samhita, which are giving some appreciation, little bit of glorification to that demigod as a devotee of Krishna, of Govinda. So that's an interesting little point. So the sun is there, the king of all planets. The sun, who is the king of all the planets, full of infinite effulgence, the image of the good soul, is as the eye of this world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in pursuance of whose order the sun performs his journey, mounting the wheel of time. So in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta mentions in the second sentence, the sun is one of the hierarchy of the five gods. This is referring to Panchapasana. Have you heard of Panchapasana? If you're from a Hindu background, you might have. Panchapasana means there's five main demigods, and the householders should worship them, like the sort of Vedic Karma Kandya type. Pious householders should do the Panchapasana. Panchaupasana means the worship of the five. And they are Shiva, Brahma, Durga, Ganesh, and who's the fifth one? I mentioned Surya, didn't I? And Vishnu, perhaps. Anyway, there's five. In the commentary. Oh, I understand. Maybe in your commentary, it's not in mine.
Sorry,
right now,
I
have
minister, and then there's five main.
All right. So, yeah, there's five. And Surya is one of them. But Surya is just getting his potency from Govinda. Okay, Hare Krishna. Let us take a break for 10 minutes. Get our minds in order again. But the language is, the English is very bad. Okay, devotees, Hare Krishna, we're starting again. I just thought I'd mention, if anyone wants to note it down, that, well, I have said how in the Bhagavatam, in one of the purports, there are four types of Brahmas who go to different destinations after the end of their lives. You can find that. It's in 11.3.12. 11.3.12 purport. It's quite a big purport, but in the sort of middle of it somewhere, you'll find the description. Well, actually, towards the end of the purport, you'll find the description. The last paragraph of 11.3.12. Four types of Lord Brahmas described. Karmi Gyani devotee. The most exalted Karmi of the universe comes back to be a Brahma sometimes. The greatest speculative philosopher within the universe may become a Brahma. Then another one who's a pure devotee who goes back to Godhead. Anyway, if you're interested, you can just have a look there. 11.3.12. So let's see now, back to Brahma Samhita, and what are we doing? We are on text 53. Dharamotapapa nichayashrutayas tapamsi. So here, basically, without going into a lot of detail, but what's being discussed is dharma, different forms of dharma, and within this material world, and how Govinda, Lord Govinda, is supporting all of them. He is like the life of all of them. But in the purport, if you go through, we're not going to go through the purport, but if you do sometime, you'll see, even at the beginning, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta stresses varnashram. When we talk about dharma, by dharma is meant the allotted functions of varna and ashram, manifested by the 20 Dharma Shastras on the authorities of the Vedas. So I think the only thing I really want to say about that is that Varnashram is, you know, it's a very scientific thing, and I'm sure you've all heard a lot about Varnashram. We are following it to some degree, not absolutely. But one very interesting point about Varnashram in general is that, and Lord Chaitanya makes this point, in fact, let me just read what he says. Oh, I don't have the verse number, but it's chapter 22 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila. The followers of the Varnashram institution accept the regulative principles of the four social orders and four spiritual orders. However, if one carries out the regulative principles of these orders, but does not render transcendental service to Krishna, he falls into the hellish condition of material life. Harry Ball, isn't that interesting? It's a very important point. You know, there's talk from time to time, you hear talk amongst different devotees, Varnashram, what is it, we must do it, and you know, all these types of things. But if it's not done in like serious Krishna consciousness, according to Lord Chaitanya, you go to hell. Along with your Varnashram. So, you know. So therefore, really, you've got to be Krishna conscious. You don't just follow Varnashram. It's not the answer. You've got to be Krishna conscious and then follow Varnashram. And that is sort of the recipe for success as far as Varnashram is concerned. Let's just have a look here. Right now. Okay, so we'll go on to 54. And of course, you know, expanding it in terms of the other processes mentioned in the verse, there's penances, there's all different sort of things mentioned. Virtues, the Vedas, penances, all the potency for this, for these things, is coming from Govinda. Yeah. And then verse 44 is nice verse. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda who burns up to their roots all fruitive activities of those who are imbued with devotion and impartially ordains for each the due enjoyment of the fruits of one's activities. All those who walk in the path of work in accordance with the chain of their previously performed works, no less in the case of the tiny insect that bears the name of Indragopa, than in that of Indra, king of the devas. Anyway, first point that he makes there is that if you're a devotee, Govinda burns up all your reactions and attachments to material things. Otherwise, for people, as he says, all those who walk in the path of work, the fruit of workers, Govinda has the ultimate responsibility for what reactions, the consequences you get from all your activities. But he does it, as he says here, impartially. So if the Lord gives you, if you're a non-devotee, and somehow out of the blue means it's a reaction from before, you get a lot of money. Govinda, Krishna, is ultimately in charge of that. Of course, the demigods are the ones who are, you know, sort of the operational people who are getting things done in practical terms. But behind the scenes, it's the Lord, it's his system. Yeah, and he sees that it's the system works properly. Yeah. So, therefore, if someone gets a whole lot of money just apparently out of the blue, but it's a reaction to a previous pious activity, in fact, then Govinda is ultimately responsible, but he's impartial. You're just getting it because you deserve it. If you didn't deserve it, you wouldn't get it. It's not like he decided that, oh, I like the look of you. Oh, you look like a nice guy. Here, take 10 million rupees. No, because you did something suitable in the past, you got it. And he is ultimately responsible. Although, you know, it's carried out by the demigods. But then if somehow you get smashed to pieces, some heavy thing happens and maybe you become destroyed or something like that, it's not because the Lord was thinking, oh, I don't like the look of you. It's just you're getting what you deserve, that's all. He's impartial. But for the devotees, as the beginning of the verse says, he frees them from all their reactions and everything so they can go back to Godhead. You wanted to say something? Oh, karma mimamsa. Yeah, okay. That's an interesting point. It comes up in the course of, I mean, the explanation comes up in the course of the description by Krishna. Krishna's description on the surface is that the demigods or God or, you know, any controlling person has no, not just no right, but no ability to control or change what reactions people get. All they can do is see they get them. Yeah. That's the idea. That God, in other words, God becomes subordinate to the process of action and reaction. But the point is that for the devotees, then apichet sudaracharo bhajate bhavananda sadureva samantavya samyavya dasatohisa. I mean, that's part of the picture. That the Lord changes the reactions of a devotee or just takes them away. Or changes them. So therefore karma mimamsa doesn't apply to the devotees. To the non-devotees, in many ways, karma mimamsa applies actually. The demigods, you know, from Yamaraj, they get a list. Through the life of this person, on this day he must get this, on another day he must get that, on another day he must get something else. This is coming from Yamaraj. And the demigod gets the list, and all the demigod can do is see, okay, oh, today he's due to get this, all right, and the person gets it. The demigod has no right to change any of those listed reactions. Yeah. So karma mimamsa is correct, at least in many ways, for non-devotees. But for the devotees, it's not true. Because the Lord is there. And the Lord makes so many arrangements independent of the karma of the devotee. Okay, we're going to carry on. Where are we? Number 55 here. 55? Yeah. Okay. 55, according to our study guide, is introducing the process of sadhana bhakti. I'll just read the verse. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, the meditators of whom, by meditating upon him under the sway of wrath, means anger. Amorous passion, lust. Natural friendly love, fear. Parental affection, delusion, reverence, and willing service. Attain to bodily forms befitting the nature of their contemplation. Anyway, the basic point is, whatever your consciousness is, maybe I should put it differently, someone who is conscious of Krishna in some way or another, like these ways mentioned here, maybe anger. Who is the person? Do you remember the classic example of someone who was very Krishna conscious, but in the mood of anger? Not Kamsa. Not exactly. Loving, you're right. In a sense, you're right. But not who it was like. His main mood was he was angry with Krishna. Not Shishupal. Shishupal is the classic example. It's stated in the Bhagavatam that from his earliest childhood, when he could only speak broken words, you know, as little children do, you know, at best, mama, papa, on that sort of level. He never talked about mama and papa. He only talked about Krishna, but in a mood of anger. Even in the broken language of a child. Yeah. So, you know, so wrath means anger. So that's the classic example of Shishupal. Amorous passion is the gopis. It looks like lust. That they're young girls who are just attracted to this very amazing young boy, as happens in life. Natural friendly love. Natural friendly love. Who is the class? Is it the Pandavas? Is it? Let me just see. Is it? Who is it? Is it? Oh. I think the Pandavas are familial. Natural friendly love. I'm trying to remember the classic example. Oh no, here it is, sorry. Here it is. Natural friendly love is the Pandavas. Fear is Kamsa. Parental affection is Nanda and Yashoda. Delusion. These are like the classic examples of these particular types of personalities. Delusion, interesting, is the Brahmins who are performing sacrifice. They're the classic example. Reverence. Well, I don't have an example here. But willing service, which is the last one mentioned in the verse, is Narada Muni. Narada Muni. Yeah. So all these people, as the verse says, they were all meditating on Krishna in different ways. And as a result, the verse says, they attained to bodily forms befitting the nature of their contemplation. You know, people like Shishupal and Dantavakra, for that matter, Kamsa, of course they're special people. But basically people like that will merge into the Brahmajyoti. And then those like the gopis, they go to Goloka Vrindavan, You know, there are different types of gopis, three main types. The eternal gopis, those gopis who became perfect in the previous life, in that type of mood, like gopis, although they weren't exactly gopis in the previous life, but they developed that mood, they became gopis like the Rishichari gopis. Rishicharis, yeah. The Upanishads. The Upanishads. They became gopis. And then there's a third category of gopi who had not become perfect completely. They're sort of on the level of bhava or thereabout, which is, you know, part of perfection, but it's not like full perfection, it's the beginning of perfection. But they were allowed to become gopis in Krishna Lila 5,000 years ago. And it was that group, they became married, and they had children in the normal, through the normal biological process. Whereas, for example, Radharani was married, but there was no contact at all. As Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, her husband, Abhimanyu, did not even touch her shadow. Okay. So let us move on, devotees, to 56. It is just a real classic verse. It's really amazing. There are different ways of chanting it. And usually our devotees don't chant it nicely. It's a shame. But if you know how to chant it, it is just so beautiful. Yeah, and this is now, you know, there was Devidam was mentioned, Maheshdam is in between, and then Haridam. You know, Maheshdam was just in the material world, it would be included in Devidam. If it was just in the spiritual world, it would be included in Haridam, but it's not. It's touching both. It's in between, but touching both. And then Haridam, and then Goloka. The four were mentioned. The first three have already been described, or at least each one had a verse, between 54 and 44. 44 and 55. And now the description of Goloka. I worship that transcendental seat known as Sweta Dweep, where as loving consorts, the Lakshmis and their unalloyed spiritual essence means the gopis, practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem. We mentioned that yesterday. It's not just the rocks. It's the ground. Everything is Chintamani. All water is nectar. Every word is a song. Every gate means every step is a dance. The flute is the favorite attendant. Effulgence is full of transcendental bliss. And the supreme spiritual entities are all enjoyable and tasty. Haribol. When numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk, where there's eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away, even for the space of half a moment. That realm is known as Goloka, only to a very few self-realized souls in this world. You know, Vaikuntha ends with Ayodhya. That's the end of Vaikuntha. Generally, the Vaikuntha realm, all the different planets, they're sort of roughly equal. Ayodhya is higher. In Ayodhya, you get some little bit of the higher rasas, like when Lord Ram returned, I think, or at some point in the pastimes, Lord Ram embraced Hanuman. Famous picture, you know, there are so many versions of that picture. Lord Ram is embracing Hanuman. Hanuman was very sort of, what would you say? Uncomfortable. He didn't just grab him, yes, let's embrace. He was like, okay, if that's what you want to do then. Because he sees himself, he is the servant. And the servants don't go about embracing the master like their friends. Yeah, let's get together and have fun. No way. So that the Lord expressed that. It's friendship. Hanuman is a servant, but the Lord expressed friendship by embracing him. And the relationship between Sita and Ram is, you could say, a type of conjugal relationship. It's an extremely deep relationship. And it's not the same as the relationship of Lakshmi with Narayana. It's not the same. Lakshmi is in the mood of servant. Therefore, normally, she doesn't come closer than the Lord's feet. Okay. So anyway, Vaikuntha ends with Ayodhya. Mathura or Dwarika, and then Mathura, a part of Goloka. We already talked about that. Okay, so, you know, we don't have time to go into it all in detail, but Goloka's amazing, and Srila Jiva Goswami gives an amazing commentary. I mean, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary is also very nice. We will note something in a few minutes. But let us just say that Srila Jiva Goswami says that this verse says, in Goloka, all water is nectar. All water is nectar. Let me just find the... Find the verse. So he says, if Goloka, all the water is like nectar, what is the nectar like? Is like nectar. If the water in Goloka is like our nectar, what is their nectar like? And he says, we have no experience of such things. And if every step there is like our dancing, then what is it like when they dance? Yeah, you know, if they're ordinary walking, just, you know, walking down to take lunch shortly. If you're ordinary, if their ordinary walking is like our best dancing, who's our best dancer? Anyway, whoever it is, someone like Vikreshwara Pandit, maybe. Of course, he's transcendental, and he could dance for, you know, 96 hours. And it wasn't just, you know, it was the real thing. He was flying. So if their ordinary walking is like our dancing, what is it like when they dance? And, if when they speak, it is like our best singing. Who's the best singer in Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Bhai Baba, whatever? Who's the best singer? Anyway, whoever it is, there must be someone. Their ordinary walking, just, you know, I mean, talking. Just, yeah, how are you doing? What's happening? What are you doing today? Ordinary talk. If their ordinary talk is like our best singing, what is their singing like? And he says, with each one he says, we have no experience of such things. We only have experience of our best singing, but that's like their ordinary talking. We only have experience of our best dancing. But that's just like their casual walking. So he says, we have no experience of such things. And as a result, very few people want to go there. Because it's just, it's meaningless. They just cannot relate to it. They have no experience. Yeah. And as a result, very few people want to go there. Yeah. I don't know if you were in the Bhagavatam class yesterday. What's his name? Vaso Ghosh Prabhu said how in Sanskrit there is no bad language. If you were there, you would remember that. Like no curse words, swearing words in Russia, mat. Mata niet. So, there's a very interesting description by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur of how when the bridge buses say certain words, which sometimes or often are considered like bad words, criticisms, but they're not. They're glorifications. Let me just read a few. You know, if you know a little Sanskrit, you would know the word matsar or matsarya. Matsarya. Where does that appear? Is it the second verse? Second verse of the Bhagavatam, right? Yeah. The word matsarya is there. Means envy. So, when the bridge busses say the word matsara, they do not mean envy. But they mean my lake. Mat Sara. I mean, if you're familiar with the language a bit, you know. Sara means lake. Mat, of course, means my. So Matsara, popularly, it is known to mean envy. But when the bridge buses use it, they mean Matsara, my lake. You follow? Sara. Sara means lake. Rasa and Sara are the same around the other way. Yeah. Sara. Mat Sara. My lake. Not that I'm envious of you. Well, this is a one which you wouldn't be familiar with, but Kala. Kala. In Sanskrit, popularly, it means demon. When the bridge busses use it, it means a lady's sash. What a cloth a woman may put around her waist. You see? You follow the idea. And you know, well, mala. Are you familiar with the word mala? No, not mala. 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 Mala means defect in Sanskrit. Mala. When the bridge busses use it, it means gentle. Delicate. Like that. Now you must know the word dosh. Kaliya dosha nide raja. You must know that. I mean, if you're bhakti shastras, bhakti vaibhavas, you must know the word dosh. Kaliya dosha nide raja. Kali Yuga is an ocean of fault, dosh. Dosh means fault. When the and pradosh. Pradosh, well, it's just sort of a development on the word dosh. When the bridge busses use the word pradosh, they do not mean fault. They mean moon. The moon. Yeah. And this, of course, you all know. When they use the word danda, they don't mean the rod of chastisement of the king. They mean the handle of a chamara for fanning Krishna, or the handle of an umbrella for holding over Krishna. So, anyway, there's a whole lot of them. But those are a few examples. Now, let's just see here. Okay, well, let us just mention that in the verse it says, what does it say? It says that there's no time. Well, it says there is transcendental time, which is ever present and no past, no future. Which, you know, maybe to the materially conditioned mind suggests sort of time is suspended. There was no yesterday. There'll be no tomorrow. There's no night, no morning, no evening. It's not like that. The thing is, time is there. There's morning, midday, afternoon, then night, and next morning, and it goes on. But it doesn't deteriorate anything. Nothing deteriorates. Nobody ages. And every night is a full moon night in Goloka Vrindavan. Then what is it now? Let's see. I don't know if you noticed in the verse. Bhaje Sweta Deepam. You know this word bhaja. I worship. Bhaje Sweta Deepam. The idea here is he worships the abode. He's not just worshiping the Lord. He's worshiping the abode. Bhaje Sweta Deepam. Tamahamiha Goloka Itiya. The abode is worshipable as the Lord. And in this regard, we can note that when Krishna left Vrindavan, he just went down the road, 25 kilometers. You know, you could walk it in a day if you really wanted to. It's like a Govardhan Parikrama. It's not that far. It's not like he went to Delhi. He just went to Mathura. It's just down the road. But the Brijbasis did not go. Well, they went initially, some of them, when he left. But then they returned. But Krishna didn't return. But then they did not go back and say, you know, we were waiting for you in Vrindavan, you didn't come. So here we are, we've come back to Mathura. They stayed in Vrindavan. Because they feel, because Vrindavan and Krishna, they're sort of the same. Yes, so the abode, it's such a situation. They didn't just leave Vrindavan and go to Mathura. They felt, we will stay in Vrindavan until Krishna returns. Now, there's one last thing I just want to mention before we go on to the final group of verses. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta points to it is part of the last line of the first verse. Chidanandam Jyoti Paramapi Tadas Vadyam Apicha. So he refers to the part Param Api Tad Asvadyam api cha. It's in the purport. Look in the last paragraph, devotees. Look in the last paragraph of the purport. And we are going to read it. But look at it very carefully. There is a hidden meaning of the proposition, even the Supreme, that is also nevertheless the object of enjoyment, which is those words, paramapi tad asvadyam api cha. So the Supreme, who is the enjoyer, but is also the object of enjoyment. It'll become clearer as we go through. The word paramapi indicates that Sri Krishna is the only truth, absolute, in all the transcendental blissful principles, and tad asvadyam api means his object of enjoyment, who's Radharani. The glory of Radha's love for Krishna, the tasty quality or rasa of Krishna that is realized by Radha, and the bliss of which Radha is conscious, In the process of such realization, all these threefold bhavas become available for enjoyment by Krishna. Well, when? Does your book just say Krishna he? They left out the word when. Otherwise it's not literate. It's not English. So these three things, you remember these are the three reasons why Krishna appeared as Lord Chaitanya. So these three become available for enjoyment by Krishna when he attains his personality of Sri Gaurasundara. So in other words, Lord Brahma, when he spoke this, way back, not 500 years ago and not 5,000, but way back, like in the beginning of creation, he was referring to the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. It is also this that constitutes the transcendental bliss of the delicious, loving service or rasa manifested by Sri Gaurasundara. This also eternally exists only in the self-same Sweta Dwipa. So we mentioned the other day, I think you remember, how even though Gokula is in the center, Sweta Dwipa is the outer part, and you know, Dwarka's there and various other things are there. But Sweta Dwipa is very special. Don't underestimate Sweta Dwipa in the picture of Goloka Vrindavan. Because it's only in Sweta Dwipa where Lord Chaitanya, where Krishna has his pastimes as Lord Chaitanya, that Krishna becomes complete. And Krishna's lila, Krishna's whole experience in life becomes complete. So therefore he says, Bhaje Sweta Dwipa. He doesn't actually say, it's interesting, Bhaje Gokula or Goloka. Bhaje Sweta Dwipa Tamahamiha Golokam Itiyam. Sweta Dwipa is extremely important in Goloka. So there you go, devotees. Now we've got very little time left, but let's just go through the last few verses. You know, it may well go beyond 1 o'clock, like 10 minutes. I'll try to do it in 10 minutes, but it may go past. If it does, I suggest you just sort of hang in there and wait. So now we go on to 57 to 62. First of all, in 57, Lord Krishna responds. We mentioned earlier, you might recall, about pure, unmixed devotional service, but Brahma is in a mixed condition. He's a devotee. He's definitely a devotee. He's not just a materialist, but he has this desire to create from his previous lifetime. On hearing these hymns containing the essence of the truth, the Supreme Lord Krishna said to Brahma, Brahma, if you experience the inclination to create offspring by being endowed with the real knowledge of the glory of Godhead, listen, my beloved, from me to the science set forth in the following 5 shlokas. You could note, if you want, in the last line of the Sanskrit, the first word is vatsa. Vatsa. Vatsa translates as, well, he's translated it as beloved. It also translates something like darling, if you're familiar with that term in English. Very beloved. Extremely beloved. Yeah. So that's the introduction. Then, let's just read through the verses. 58. When the pure spiritual experience is excited by means of cognition and service or bhakti, super excellent, unalloyed devotion, characterized by love for Godhead, is awakened towards Krishna, the beloved of all souls. Remember, who is speaking here? Krishna. And he's talking about himself. He doesn't say, it's awakened towards me. This is not uncommon in Sanskrit culture, in Vedic culture. A person is talking about himself, but the person makes no reference, like in the first person, I, me, my. Yeah. So that's what he's doing. And what's he saying here? Just let's see. Well, you know what he's saying? If you read the purport, you'll see he talks about Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. In the verse, when he says, when the pure spiritual experience is excited by means of cognition, you understand cognition, understanding, like recognizing, understanding. This is Sambandha. Cognition and service. This is Abhideya. Then, super excellent, unalloyed devotion characterized by love for Godhead. This is Prayojana. So in this verse then, the Lord has introduced the process in terms of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. And then 59. We are making progress here. The highest devotion is attained by slow degrees, by the method of constant endeavor for self-realization, with the help of scriptural evidence, theistic conduct, and perseverance. Yeah, so four things. Constant endeavor, scriptural evidence, no speculation, theistic conduct, you know, proper conduct, no apparads, no nonsense, proper standards, and then perseverance. You got to keep going. Sometimes the mind may have janked, but you got to keep going. This is what the Lord is saying here to Brahma. Don't give up. Don't flake out. Then verse 60. These preliminary practices of devotion, sadhana bhakti, are conducive to the realization of loving devotion. Than whom there is no superior well-being. So there's nothing better than loving devotion. And when you've got loving devotion, then you attain the exclusive state of supreme bliss, and that takes you to the Lord. And 61, I mean, that's straightforward enough, I think. All these efforts, persevering, following scripture, acting properly and all that, they're all conducive to achieving pure devotional service. Aha, Okay, now this is an important one. It may take a couple of minutes to go through it. Abandoning all meritorious performances, serve me with faith. The realization will correspond to the nature of your faith. The people of the world act ceaselessly in pursuance of some ideal. By meditating on me by means of those deeds, one will obtain devotion characterized by love in the shape of the supreme service. So what does he mean? First of all, just give up all your materialistic activities, even if they're, by material standards, good. Give up your demigod worship and whatever else, if they're material. Give them all up. Then he says, generally people in this world act according to some ideal, like a nice principle. So if he's saying, if you meditate on me while doing nice things, then you'll develop love for me, you'll progress. We need to look at the purport, devotees. Let's see, where are we? Let me just find where we are here. Okay. All right. Look at, it is the third paragraph. This is very important. Mankind lives by the threefold activities of the body, mind, and society. Eating, seating, walking, resting, sleeping, cleansing the body, covering the body, etc. Thinking, remembering, retaining an impression, and various things. Becoming aware of an entity. These are mental activities. All right. But then, after where it says mental feats, are you with me? Mental feats. After that, marrying. Practicing reciprocal relationship between the king and the subject. Practicing brotherhood. Attending sacrificial meetings. Offering oblations. Digging wells, tanks, for the benefit of the people, etc., etc. There's a whole list there. So, if you go to the end of the list, when these acts are performed for one's selfish enjoyment, they're called karmakanda. When the desire for attainment of freedom from activity by knowledge underlines these actions, they're termed jnana yoga or karma yoga. And when these activities are managed to be performed in a way that is conducive for our bhakti, they're called jnana bhakti yoga. In other words, the subsidiary devotional practices. So you've got to focus on this a bit. But only those activities that are characterized by the principle of pure worship are called bhakti proper. My meditation is practiced in every act when bhakti proper is practiced in due time while performing the subsidiary devotional activities in one's intercourse with the ungodly people of this world. Did you get the message? Did you get the message? We read the whole, well, we didn't read the whole thing, but you saw there's a whole list of things to do. Right? Things that people do. What was the first thing? First of all, there were mental activities, mental feats. Then there were practical activities. Who remembers the first one?
Marrying.
Well done. At least someone was listening. What a popular activity. And then all sorts of other things. Digging wells to help the people. And help brotherhood amongst people. Etc., etc. You can just look through all those things again. If they're done without relationship to Krishna, that karma kandya. But here he's saying, try to cultivate pure bhakti in consciousness while doing these activities. As activities in devotional service. Do you get the idea? If you do them in a mixed condition, then they may be jnana bhakti, jnana yoga, karma yoga, or at best, jnana bhakta yoga. But if you do them in the context of cultivating pure devotional service, it's all part of bhakti. So therefore he's telling Brahma, you want to create, which is, you know, also one of this type of activity. You want to create, do it. But do it in the mood of pure bhakti. How? Remind me how? By chanting the mantras and meditating on the Lord as he's been doing. Do you follow the idea? Do you follow? Are you sure you follow? Are you sure? Not completely. I hope you get the idea, because this is sort of the conclusion of Brahma Sunita. The conclusion is, chant the mantras. You know, you can look at the yantras too if you want, but at least chant the mantras and glorify the Lord and appreciate the Lord and do these types of activities as service to him. This is what he's recommending. Brother, you want to create? Then create, but while meditating on me. Remembering me in a mood of bhakti. So what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says at the beginning of, well, he quotes the Ishavasya verse at the beginning of the next chapter, next paragraph. If the worldly acts are performed in the above manner, one does not get entangled in karma, even in hundreds of years of worldly life. So he's recommending the Ishavasya principle, actually, recognizing everything belongs to the Lord, use it all in devotional service, remember the Lord, chant the mantras, and then you can live happily in this world, even for many lifetimes. That's what the Ishapanishad says. And devotees, look, we have reached the last verse. Hari Bol. So again, this is the Lord addressing Brahma. Listen, listen, devotees. Listen, O Vidhi, I am the seed. Which means, I'm the fundamental principle of this world of animate and inanimate objects. I am Pradana, the substance of matter. I am Prakriti, the material cause. And I am Purusha, the efficient cause. Material cause basically means Durga. Efficient cause is the glance of Vishnu. This fiery energy that belongs specially to the Brahman, that inheres in you, has also been conferred by me. It is by bearing this fiery energy that you regulate This phenomenal world of animate and inanimate objects. Do you get the idea there? That he's saying, I'm the seed, I'm the fundamental principle of everything, I'm behind everything. And this fiery energy which you have, Lord Brahma, fiery energy, the energy to create, it has been conferred by me. It has been given by me. In other words, you are my Shaktyavesh avatar. You are my Guna avatar. You are my Guna avatar because I have given you this fiery energy with which you'll be able to fulfill your desire to create. And if you can handle it, if you can bear this fiery energy without getting overwhelmed by it, then you'll be able to regulate the material world. That's the message of verse 62. So, oh yeah, okay. Let's just read, have a look at the last purport. It's just really wonderful. Where are we? The last, in the last purport, I think. Here it is, okay. Look in the last purport, it's about halfway through the last purport. I am the cause of all causes. In other words, I regulate all of them by the power of my will, although I'm not a different entity from the marginal and material potencies. This is just a chintyaved abed tattva. I regulate them even though in a sense I'm not different from the tattasta, means us, the marginal potency and the material energy. By the transformation of those distinct potencies, pradhan, the substantive material principle, prakriti, material cause, and purusha, efficient cause. So by the transformation of these potencies, these things have been manifest, being produced. Hence, although as regards the subjective nature of all potency, I am pradhan, prakriti, and purusha, yet as the possessor of power, I'm eternally distinct from all those potencies. You follow? Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. I am pradhan, prakriti, and purusha, but I'm distinct from them also. This simultaneous distinction and non-difference has also sprung from my inconceivable power. So let the attainment of love for Krishna by the practice of pure devotion, through the knowledge of their mutual true relation mutual true relationship that subsists or exists between the jiva, the jada, or matter, and Krishna, based on the principle of inconceivable simultaneous distinction and non-difference, be my instruction for being handed down in the order of spiritual, preceptorial would be better, succession in your community, the Brahma Sampradaya. So in other words, Achintya Veda Veda Tattva is not just the creation of Lord Chaitanya. It's there in Bhagavad Gita, it's there in the Bhagavatam. It's an eternal principle of reality. And the Lord is instructing Lord Brahma here in that. Let it be like the foundational principle of your whole sampradaya. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki. Sri Brahma Samhita ki. God Brahmanande. Oh, a question. Okay, have we got time? You know, whatever one has been endowed with by the Lord, which includes coming through karma, because it all comes from the Lord, yeah, it all needs to be used in Krishna consciousness. If it's not, then like if someone has a lot of fiery energy, but they don't use it in Krishna consciousness, it'll be the cause of their downfall. And indeed, you know, you're well aware, I'm sure, Lord Brahma, in due course, the very same, in certain situations, his fiery power sort of got the better of him. Yeah, at least temporarily. Although, you know, he was corrected and he carried on very nicely. But that's the point. That we all, whether it's the fiery power of passion to create, whether it's like a sattvic intelligence, or whatever it is, whether it's some wealth, if these things are not used really nicely in the service of the Lord, then particularly if they're not used at all in the service of the Lord, they're just exploited independently, they will destroy the person, actually. You know, all these rich people in the world today, they're so rich, and they're using their money just to live extravagant lives, much more than the poor people. They're eating all sorts of things, drinking, smoking, and just all these things because of their wealth. And they are going to become destroyed by that. Narada Muni makes that point to Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva, the sons of Kuvera, as he's considering what to do with them. That if someone is poor, he is restricted by his poverty. He cannot just do whatever he wants. But if someone is rich like these two, and if their consciousness is wrong, then they do all sorts of nonsense on the basis of their wealth. So better these two become poverty stricken, completely, totally. As trees. They can't even go to a shop and buy something enjoyable. They're totally restricted. Better they be totally restricted. And then they may learn Am I addressing your point, actually? Yeah, so that's the idea. The in Brahma's case, the fiery energy. The Lord is saying, if you can bear it, means sort of if you can carry it without it crushing you, because it's like a heavy responsibility, then you'll be able to regulate this world and help so many living beings. But if you become bewildered, then that same useful energy, it can destroy you. And you know, if Brahma had continued chasing his daughter and one or two other things, he would have ended up in big trouble. Just like, you know, we mentioned right at the beginning of this session, I think, how in the Bhagavatam it describes there are four types of Lord Brahmas. Yeah, I mentioned that. Let me just find the statement. There are four types of Brahmas. Yeah, okay. So, a Brahma who is the most exalted karmi of the universe will come back to the material world. If he's a karmi, he hasn't become a serious devotee. A living entity who has achieved the post of Brahma by being the greatest speculative philosopher within the universe may attain impersonal liberation after being Lord Brahma. And a living entity who's been awarded the post of Brahma due to being a great devotee of the Lord enters into the personal abode of the Lord. In the Bhagavatam 3.32.15, a fourth type of Brahma is discussed. A Brahma who is a devotee of the Lord, but who has the tendency to think himself independent of or equal to the Lord, may achieve Mahavishnu's abode at the time of annihilation. But when creation begins again, he has to return and again take the post of Brahma. So in other words, not everyone who becomes a Lord Brahma just goes back to Godhead. It's not like a ticket. They're given this potency by the Lord. So whether they're karmi, jnani, or devotee, or some mixed condition, they are guna avatars. And therefore they are shakchavesh avatars. They're empowered. They have that potency, fiery energy conferred upon them. But in these cases, at least when they're not serious devotees, they come back again in one way or another. Is that okay?
Uh-huh. We are discussing about Brahma, Shiva, being one of God.
Yeah.
And to explain the kind of energy of they were able to do their service to the Lord in terms of creation and destruction. The analogy was given Chandrakanta Mani. Suryakanta Mani.
Oh, Suryakanta, yeah.
Which receives the sunlight, that's the right. Power, and it absorbs in it, then it kind of, disseminates the power.
Right.
But it is not actually the same way as the avatar, they
have their own potency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, is this guna, like Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, these three are kind of applicable in the same Suryakanta Mani analogy, or only Brahma.
Only Brahma and Shiva.
Only Brahma and Shiva.
Not Vishnu. He's the Lord. He has, so to speak, his own potency. But Brahma and Shiva, they are in the different category, they are empowered. Yeah. I have to have a look. Which verse is it? Anyway, if their statement that 46. Yeah, well, in the purport, he talks about it. In the purport, actually, somewhere. In the purport, he says, oh, I mean, it's a fairly substantial purport. He says it's sort of like 10 lines down or something. It's about the fourth sentence. The personality of Vishnu, the embodied form of the manifested quality Satguru, is quite distinct from that of Shambhu, who is adulterated with mundane qualities. Vishnu's subjective personality, which it just basically means Vishnu, is on the same level as Govinda. But Shiva isn't, because he's yogurt. So he is and he isn't, but he mainly isn't. He mainly isn't. Yeah. Then further down, it's now, where are we? Oh, I guess it's about 4 or 5 sentences up from the end. All the majestic attributes of Govinda, aggregating 60 in number, are fully present in his majestic manifestation, Narayana. Brahma and Shiva are entities adulterated with mundane qualities. Anyway, that's the basic idea. Shiva, Brahma and Shiva, they're not the same. They're in a different category. Even though they're considered avatars, but they're a different type of avatar. And they don't so much have their own potency. And particularly Brahma doesn't have his own potency. Hare Krishna, devotees. Yeah, we should finish fairly soon. Right.
And the purport family is that Brahma Loka. So if we understand that Brahma is also whenever there is disturbance from the earth, I think all the demigods, including Brahma, go to Vishnu.
Oftentimes.
Or
Brahma. Brahma is higher. Yeah. Brahma is higher than Durga. Brahma is higher than Durga, meaning the material Durga. Yeah. He is the boss of Durga. He tells her what to do. Hare Krishna! Shri Brahma Samhita Ke! Thank you. Thank you for being such good students, and please forgive us for the many shortcomings, which I know were there.